welcome everyone to another edition of Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe, and we are brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. As always, we got a great lineup of guests in store for you today where we're going to talk about companies and people that are defying the norms, breaking the rules of conventional thinking, and achieving extraordinary things in business. I'm joined today by Maggie Anderson. She's with Words That Work. She has her own business in which she teaches people how to get the message out and really rebrand and reimage themselves to reach their target audience. Dan Merkel, he's with Southern States Insurance. And Barry Flink, he's with Flex HR, the VP or executive vice president over there, actually, and a partner, and quite an extensive resume as well, which we'll get into here shortly. Guys, I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. Thanks for being here with us today.
Hey,
good
Andy.
Afternoon.
All right, Maggie, let me start with you. So we always like to do ladies first here at Renegade Radio. That's one conventional thought we stay within the framework of. So let's begin with you. Tell us a little bit about your company and exactly what it is you do.
Thanks, Andy. Words That Work has been around for about 3 or 4 years, but I've been doing this work for more than 25, doing marketing communications, helping people to stand out so they can attract the lucrative clients that they want for their business or their professional practice.
Now, tell me this. So when we think about businesses standing out, everybody wants to stand out, but you've been doing this for a long time. What are some of the key things that a company or a business needs to think about early on to make themselves stand out against the competition and really be noticed in the marketplace?
Well, I think one thing that's really important for people to get is that everything has changed dynamically. And some people are aware of this on the surface, but what has happened is that the internet has completely changed the ballgame. So when I started in business, for example, I would put an ad in a telephone directory, or if I couldn't have afforded to take out an ad in the newspaper. But now there are unlimited possibilities for small business owners to advertise and promote their business. It's phenomenal. It is the greatest opportunity that small business owners have ever had in the history of commerce. But at the same time, as we all know, everybody else has that opportunity as well. So you've got something like 2 billion, I think there's 30% of people globally are on the internet, and that's a little over 2 billion. And so you figure that's a pretty big market. But all those people also have access to the internet to promote their own business. So what's most important now is for a company to recognize, how am I different from the other people that are doing what I do? And that used to be, you know, oh, I have some features that are different. But now it really has more to do with who you are as a business owner, as a company. What is the persona of your business? Because the second thing that's happened because of the internet is that people don't want to relate to an ad or a company. They want to do business with a person. And that's been the drill forever. Everybody's always said, oh, you know, people do business. But now, when people, even when they purchase on the internet, they want to know who they're working with. And you need to really express who you are as a person, as a company, as a business, what your values are, how you're different from every other business on the internet that they could do business with.
So how does a company figure that out? I mean, how do you decide this should be my brand messaging? This is the side of me that I want to reveal to the world.
Well, quite honestly, it takes a little self-reflection now. I really think that the business owner who is operating on the past without really looking into themselves and saying, okay, what am I passionate about? You know, what strengths do I really have to bring to the marketplace? Okay, I went to biz school or I went to law school. You've got those superficial skills, but what strengths do I as a person bring that make this practice or this business different from every other one? So, you know, I hate to say it, but you got to get down there with your bad self and really figure out who you are and what you bring.
Now, when you get the message out there, what's more important? Is it the actual message, or is it the medium in which you're promoting the message?
You're thinking Marshall McLuhan here, that 80s guy or 70s guy. Okay, social media has taken over, right? And if you don't use it, you're really getting behind. You're definitely getting behind. So the medium is really important, but the message is not unimportant. Everyone is inundated with messages. I mean, your inbox is full every day, I'm sure.
In social media, you can easily just become noise.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got to have content that people are going to want to grab onto, they want to relate to.
And it's got to be fresh content. I see a lot of people that just recycle content, which to some degree, I guess, is good. But once people have seen it, they're looking for something new occasionally as well, right?
Well, and I think what's interesting to me is when someone discovers an article or a comment that's really valuable that I haven't seen, but kind of explains it and expands on it.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So how does somebody manage all this? I mean, as a small business owner, you know, we already wear tons of hats, right? And social media can be an intensive thing. I mean, you can spend a tremendous amount of time with
no
it,
question.
Right?
No question.
So how does a small business owner manage that?
Well, I do a program, a VIP one day, and that's part of the purpose of that program. The first part is really visioning where you want to go with your company and what strengths you bring and what makes you different. And then the second part is looking at everything that's out there. There are things that you listeners probably don't even know are out there yet. You know, it's just there's so many new ones coming on board. So we look at everything and we say, okay, what really resonates for your business? What is going to work for you? And pick those.
So when you look at the small business owners out there that are trying to build their marketing brand and get the right message out there, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see? The kind of you look at the message and go, no.
Yeah. You know, I think consistency is a big one. Every business owner I know is passionate about their business, is wanting to put themselves into the business, and they're not just there to make money, although money's good. Ask me the question again, Andy.
I see what you're doing here. You're testing to see if I'm paying attention to me.
Yeah,
not just are you paying attention, but I paying attention. So I'm just looking, what are some of the most common mistakes these business owners make?
The ones that
you just look at and you're just horrified by.
The inconsistency in your messaging. You know, you're excited about this part of your business. Something else comes along. Oh, I think I'll get on Pinterest. That's a good thing. I need to up my LinkedIn event. I'm going to do a LinkedIn event. You know, you've got to have a consistent message that you put out that people recognize, same colors, same words, same message. And this is the hardest thing, I think, for entrepreneurs to do because they're usually very creative. And they don't like to say the same thing over and over and over again. But when you are putting out a consistent brand message, you really have got to do that and make sure that everyone else in your company that represents your brand is also doing that.
Okay. Well, let's do this. I mean, you're the expert here. So we always like to see how we use as consultants and coaches, we use our own methodologies here. So what's the brand messaging that you put out to the world? What is it that the audience needs to know about you that makes you stand out and be different?
Okay. I work one-on-one with executives and entrepreneurs, and I help them stand out so that they are attracting, not chasing after business, but attracting business to them so that their ideal clients recognize them as the person they want to do business with.
Okay, well, fantastic. Well, for our listeners that are tuning in and thinking, hey, I've got problems in my marketing, I've got problems in my brand messaging, how can they go about getting in touch with you and finding out more information and if you can help them?
MaggieAnderson.com. That's my website. I've also got a blog site they can click on when they get there. If they want to get free regular tidbits about marketing a small business. Happy to share those. I have a great little book that they can download for free on that site. And then I have programs and explore those and see if one of those is a fit for you. The VIP One Day is a great one. It's just a great way to leap from where you are into a fresher, more dynamic brand.
Okay. Well, I want to get some more questions headed your way here shortly. A little bit about how some of the things you're doing are out of the box and some things you might suggest to our listeners. But I want to move on to Dan real quick. Can you hang out with us while we visit with him? Find out what he's got
Absolutely.
To tell us?
Absolutely. I can't wait to hear what Dan has to
All
say.
All right. So Dan, welcome to the show. I want to talk to you about insurance. You're with Southern States Insurance, and we think of insurance, and it kind of gets neglected, I think, sometimes. You know, we just think, oh, yeah, I've got my car insurance, I got my home insurance. But in business, it's really an important piece. So for our small business owners, what do they need to know about Southern States Insurance, and what can you do to help them?
You made some great points, Andy. The key is that it is often referred to as a necessary evil. It's something a business has to have. In the early stages of a business, every penny counts. Cash flow is king. So a lot of these, as Maggie mentioned, entrepreneurs are somewhat risk takers anyways. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in a position they're in. So sometimes they'll neglect some areas of insurance just by saying, you know what, the chances of that happening are pretty slim, so I don't want to waste the money. I need the cash. I need to keep this business going. That would be the first problem. The second one tends to be when a business turns their insurance into a commodity. So all of a sudden they're saying, look, I'm going to get three quotes and I'm taking the cheapest one that walks in here. Well, the problem with that is it's not like a GMC Yukon that you can go online and get all the specifics and say, no matter where I get it, for whatever price, it's going to be pretty much the same thing. And that's usually not the case. There's so many variables that go into an insurance program because we're talking about liability in case somebody involved with the company messes up and causes bodily injury or property damage to somebody else while they're doing business. You know, that premium is charged based on certain numbers like payroll, sales, or square footage. So anybody could mess those numbers up and have the wrong program put together. The second part's workers' compensation. The laws are pretty obvious to most of us that are in it, that are cut and dry, but people want to play with the basis. And the basis says three or more part-time or full-time employees. Well, all of a sudden they say, well, that's not really an employee. He's a 1099 subcontractor. He doesn't count. Or I'm the owner, so I don't count. And so many of those areas are tough in the beginning. And I understand, again, business owners are trying to make sure the cash is king. But turning it into a commodity like that makes things very difficult. So.
Well, how do you prevent that? I mean, you know, thinking about some of the things Maggie talked about brand messaging, what's the message that you guys are really putting out there to help people not turn insurance into a commodity? Because, frankly, you open your doors and put a we're in business sign up, and, you know, you'll have two dozen insurance agents from around the area, you know, calling and on your doorstep all wanting to, you know, get you enrolled in something. How do you separate mm-hmm. yourself from that?
Well, that's a great point, Andy. Well, I tell people all the time, and I speak to a lot of groups around town in different venues, hire an agent and then let him go find you the best price, the best program. Interview a couple of agents. Find one that you has a good feel, that has a good feel for you. You have a good feel for them and everything's all tight. And then ask them to go out. Because I'm an independent agent. And a lot of us out there, the majority in the business insurance market are independent agents. So I'm a broker. I've got access to, you know, in between 50 and 100 companies depending on what you do. So what my clients look to me for is advice and telling them what their program should look like. Then I take their information. I go out to the market, as we say, and I'll come back and say, look, here's three companies that say they want to write your business. Here's the difference in the premiums. Here's the difference in the coverages. Let's talk about what fits for you.
So what are there any insurance coverages that, you know, aren't optional? I mean, we talked about, you know, things that the companies say cash is king, I want to cut this, I want to cut that. What are some things that they absolutely, positively, maybe even by law, have to have?
Another good question, Andy. The only one out there right now, by law, if you will, is workers' comp. And that's if an employee should get hurt on the job. And this goes back to the Industrial Revolution. The unions were formed, and they needed to protect the workers. So if there was a good part that came out of the Industrial Revolution and the unions, this was it, because this forces, by law, a business owner to make sure that if his employees are put in a position where they could possibly get hurt, injured, or killed on the job, that there is insurance in place. After that, you don't have so much the legal requirement as you will from a financial institution that may be involved with your company, being your bank. So if you borrowed $500,000 from your bank for your line of credit to run your business, they're going to want to make sure that you've insured everything you can insure in case something should happen, a tornado, a fire, something burns up, blows away, or your products get stolen, that you can cover that note that you've got with the bank. And with the buildings, anybody's got a house that's ever had a mortgage, you know that the bank's going to require you to carry coverage on your house. That's no different than the mortgagee of this building we're sitting in right now.
So what insurance mistakes do you see? People just, you know, they don't put the money in, or they don't put enough in, they don't have enough coverage. You know, anything of that nature that you realize that when you see, kind of like the same thing with Maggie, you just look at the small business owner and go, no.
Yeah. I think what happens is a business owner will get a policy when he gets started, and he'll put it in the drawer because, frankly, it's not real sexy. It's not fun. It's not exciting. The running joke is if you can't sleep at night, take it home and try to read it. So dealing with insurance every year when it renews is often painful. And if they can avoid it, they will. They say, look, my premium is $6,000. It's been that way for a couple of years. I'll just send my renewal check in. And the agent's either gone or the agent hasn't taken the time to come and sit down and say, hey, what's changed? You know, all of a sudden your inventory is doubled, but nobody's bothered to tell the insurance company. So now you're underinsured on your inventory. Your payrolls have drastically changed, but your workers' comp premium hasn't changed. Those can come to bite you when it comes to the liability and the workers' comp, because those two premiums are auditable, which means if you tell me that you have $100,000 in payroll, and we put that down and write a policy based on $100,000 in payroll, and you hire four more people before the end of the year, your actual payroll turned out to be $200,000. Well, you have to go back and pay the difference, as you would with like an IRS audit. You got to pay the difference, and your new premium is going to be based on the new number, which is $200,000. So those are surprises that small business owners shouldn't have to have. And we go back to, we keep talking about cash is king in a small business. That's a big chunk of cash. And I've seen guys say, you know, hey, I just bought a new truck for the company. We had a good year. All of a sudden, he finds out he's got a big audit due. He's got to go borrow the money. So it's not a good taste in their mouth when it creeps up on them. So to answer your question, the biggest mistake is that people don't pay close enough attention to it while they're growing so that the policy or the insurance program grows along with them.
Now, you mentioned getting an agent. So if I'm a small business owner, again, I'm wearing a lot of hats. I want somebody else to do all the legwork. Is this something the agent's going to do for me because he's getting paid on the back end, or do I have to front up money to the agent so you know they're going to provide this service for me?
Well, we're one of the few businesses where we do all the work up front with no pay on a maybe. So, yeah, we get paid on the back end. We are paid commission. I don't hide it from anybody. I try to tell as many people as possible the average commission is 10% of your premium, and that goes to the agency, not the agent that's coming to your door and taking you to lunch. That agent typically is making about 40% of that or 4% total. And then the running joke is Uncle Sam gets half of that, my wife gets half of what's left, and there isn't much left for me to take you to lunch. But anyways, so to answer your question, yes, you need an agent that's willing to come out and take the time, a professional agent, you know, that's built his business that way. And early on, you'll find a lot of agents eager to do it. The basis of my business has been more of being an insurance advisor. I've been in the business quite a while. I've got quite a large book of clients that are awesome people. My new clients that I bring in, I don't quote insurance. Some people out there might say, well, that sounds kind of cocky. Well, I've got all the experience in the world in quoting insurance. But if Andy comes to me and says, hey, I talked to Maggie, and Maggie says, you did a great job for her. I just need somebody to look out for me like you just mentioned. Those are the ones I love, and I love to do it with small growing businesses. I love to do it with large companies, and I've got several, because their needs consistently change.
Makes sense. So what does the future of insurance look like? Are there changes coming down the pipe? I mean, sometimes when we think insurance, we think nothing has changed in 50 years. I mean, what's the future look like?
Well, I've been telling clients for the last 4 to 5 years your rates are going up, and they haven't. And the reason I say that is the insurance companies take your premiums and they invest them. They invest it in the stock market, they invest it in real estate, and they invest it in municipal bonds, cities. Well, the stock market's making a little bit of a comeback, but if you look at the real estate market and you look at the municipal bonds and you look at the amount of claims that's been going on from natural disasters over the country in the last 3 to 4 years, I don't know how the insurance companies are in business. Premiums have been going down or staying flat for the last 6, 7 years. So what we are seeing, and I just had lunch with a representative from a big company today, we're seeing a 10 to 20% increase pretty much across the board. Going back to the homeowner's insurance scenario, if your homeowner's is paid out of escrow, you may not see it right away, but you will when your escrow company tells you you're underfunded because rates are going up on homeowners. Hail damage, the hurricanes, the tornadoes that we've been seeing around the country, that all adds up. So it's here. So to answer your question, the rates for insurance are going up across the board 10 to 20% over the next several years.
So if people want to find out how you might be able to help them scout out a better plan, a better strategy for their insurance, how would they go about getting in touch with you, Dan?
Kind of like Maggie did, the best way to get me is via email. And my email address is D as in Dan Merkel, M-E-R-K-E-L, at, it's all spelled out, Southern States Insurance.com.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, can you hang out a few more minutes? I know you're on a tight schedule today, but I'd like to bring Barry into the conversation before we get too far along. Is that all right with you?
Absolutely. Sounds great.
All right. Well, Barry, welcome to the show. And I'm not even going to begin to read your resume here. I'm just going to kind of turn to you and let you tell us a little bit about what you do. But you are very clearly an experienced business guy. You know what you're doing, feet on the ground. You've been with Flex HR for a while, and you really specialize in helping companies make good HR decisions about how to move forward in their business. So with that, let me turn it over to you, and you tell me a little bit about what you guys do and how you help companies.
I also will skip the biography because it's too long and too boring. We are a concept that's 12 years old. Outsourcing's been around for years. We were one of the first in the United States to come up with the idea that you do not need to have full-time HR. You need full-time support at a part-time price, and that's what we provide. Generally speaking, our market are companies with as few as 10 employees up to about 150. If they're more than 150, they probably do need full-time HR. Our original concept would be that we'd help growing companies and we'd work ourselves out of a job. We don't know how to do a business plan very well. Out of our first 157 companies, over 100 are still with us. Some have been with us for 10 years. We became their HR departments.
Well, tell us a little bit about what an HR outsourcing like yourself is going to do for a company. I mean, you got a small business. Again, you're wearing a lot of hats. You got enough stuff to worry about. You kind of think, if I got the minimum wage stickers and the vacation stickers and all the stuff I'm supposed to have posted on the walls done, I'm good, right? What exactly are you guys bringing to the table beyond that that I need to know as a small business owner?
Well, certainly you've touched on some of the compliance ends of it. Human resources management in this country, I'll put it this way. You manage three entities in any business, people, time, and capital. Case studies just proliferate. There are many companies in the U.S. that manage capital fairly well. Some manage time fairly well. People management lags behind the two. Our job is to help maximize the use of human resources. So in addition to the things you've described, which we'll call compliance issues, complying with federal laws, state laws, and so forth, it's also our job to help develop training programs to refer people to folks like Maggie. Certainly when it comes to insurance, we manage insurance brokers. There are 14 insurance brokers that we decide which company will get the broker. We match the broker to the company and the company's needs.
So what type of legal things do I need to be aware of as a small business owner when it really comes to HR, a place where I can get myself in trouble in a hurry?
Lots of initials, ERISA, ADA, EEO. I could go on and on. Basically, there are over 30 laws that govern the acceptable working conditions for an employee. Dan touched on a couple of them as well, workers' compensation. Our job is to be an expert in all of these things. Another way of looking at it is, you can pay us about $200 an hour, or you can pay an attorney $600 an hour for the same services. The only thing we don't do is we don't go to court. Our job is to make sure you don't have to go to court, to be proactive.
Well, tell me a little bit more about how the services work. I mean, when I think of HR, you know, my past life in the corporate world, there's somebody actually in the company. There's an HR office, and there's staffing of people doing that. For an outsource, how frequently are you touching the organization? How often are you involved in things that are going on? Or is it more of an off-site consulting? How does that work?
Excellent question. Minimum, we are on site at least one day a month for our very smallest package. It can be up to one day per week. It can be 3 or 4 days a week. It depends a lot on the company's needs and, frankly, what they can afford. But in all cases, there is a minimum touch of one day. We are available for telephone counseling 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I have a team of about 20 of us, and there's always someone available to answer questions, deal with challenges when they come up, and they do.
Now, we've talked about some of the problems and troubleshooting that goes on in the HR world. How about training and development of people? What role do you guys play in that?
We do some of that ourselves, and we farm out a lot of that. So in a sense, we're not only an outsourcing solution, but we're also a finder of outsourcing solutions. We have affiliate partners, over 200 of them. You can't name a need that we can't suggest the right resource. So in a real sense, we're a broker of brokers. But a real way to look at us is we're a trusted advisor. We help the entrepreneur or CEO not only identify what their needs are, but help find the solutions.
Is there a company that is too small for you? I mean, as a small business owner, you sound like you've got a lot of different packages. Is it ever too early to start thinking about HR? I'm too small. I don't need that right now.
I'd say the point where you think about it as soon as you have your first employee. So you start a business, and we have had people come to us who are micro enterprises. Mm-hmm. They have one person, and they want an HR function. We tell them, you're not ready yet. But as soon as they hire their first employee, that's when it's time to think about it.
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, that as soon as that first employee is hired, there's a liability shift in the business, right?
And the liability, whether it's one person or 1,000 persons, there are still the same basic liabilities.
Makes a lot of sense. So when you look at the future of HR, you know, maybe take us a couple years back to a couple years in the future. What's changed recently, and what do you see changing in the near future that small businesses need to be aware of?
Certainly, we're part of what's now a larger trend. The number of full-time employed HR executives is dropping at about 8% a year. We expect that today is going to come that over 50% of the HR services provided in the United States will be provided by people like us.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, guys, I want to take the last few minutes of our show today, and I really want to dig in and get to this idea of breaking the rules of conventional thinking. That's really our theme here and what we're all about. So tell us about some of the things in your specific industries and specific businesses that really stand out against the norm. So, again, when I think HR, when I think of brand messaging and marketing, what are the traditional thought patterns that most people have in their brain that they need to shift their focus and thinking, because obviously the renegade rules are what's driving companies forward?
I'll give you one answer to start. It is almost a constant pattern. When an employee is having trouble, the perception is it's the employee's fault. Probably in over 70% of the cases, it's not just the employee's part. Either the wrong person was hired in the first place, developmental efforts were not made. It's an old adage, it costs less to rehabilitate than to hire someone new. And that's the sort of thing. And really, Maggie's doing some of that as well, where we're both saying, you've made an investment in human capital. Before you discard it, let's try to fix it.
Well, now, you're on a real important point because, you know, in my consulting experience, I've seen many times when you go into a company and there's a problem, oftentimes the leader or the owner of the company is quick to point to the employee and go, here's my problem, fix them. But oftentimes that's not where the problem is that needs fixing. It's actually the owner that needs fixing.
I want to make one comment on that, and it's also a strong consistency. There's an old adage, entrepreneurs don't make good CEOs, mm-hmm. and that is frequently the case. And a lot of our clients, the original owner, the founder, the entrepreneur is now the CEO, and in many cases, they need training and development.
Well, this is a, if I can jump in,
Maggie.
This is a really good reason for business owners to think about having someone like Dan or Barry or me to come in, because it's different eyes on the situation. And a lot of times, obviously an owner wants to do well. So it's just because they don't see what the barriers are to that, what their own personal barriers are or the interactions within the company. So if you bring in someone like Barry that can, you know, point out, well, you know, I'm noticing this interaction with you and this other person and it doesn't seem to be working. Did you notice that? That's different than, you know, the vice president or, you know, someone else in the company bringing it up. Would you say that?
Sometimes you can do something. It's silly, but it's very dramatic. And I just did this last week, so it comes to mind. I have a CEO that has complained about his employees, complained about the weather, time, et cetera. I took him into the bathroom and had him look at the mirror. I said, when's the last time you looked at that guy? And he just stopped and said, I hadn't thought about that. And said, you're part of the equation. When everything in your environment's bothering you, there's a commonality, and it's you. And sometimes all of us, and that even includes my own company, we have to think about, we're a 12-year-old company, and we have to think about how we manage ourselves.
Well, you know, and Maggie, you brought up such a great point about being able to have somebody else take a look at it. I mean, I know from my experience that that is very common. It's kind of like having, you know, a bad spot on your wall, right? You know, you got to...
Just get used to it.
You just get used to it, you know. You see it every day, so you learn
Absolutely.
To ignore it, right?
Absolutely.
You know, what about with marketing and branding? I mean, how do companies, especially smaller companies, how do they get that fresh perspective and really keep tabs on their message? Because if you wrote it especially, you fall in love with it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a good idea to have a mastermind group. Have a group of people who you know are smart business people and have your best interests, but are going to tell you the truth, are going to give you good feedback. Or have a coach. A coach is a wonderful feedback system because you're paying them to tell you the truth. And, you know, nobody in your company is in a position to tell you the truth if you're the CEO. So
what do you do as a, let me ask this question because this is a great point. What do you do as a small business? And let's go in both regards. When you talk about board of advisors, Barry, I know you're involved in a lot of different boards and are an advisor to many different institutions around the Atlanta area. But as a small business owner, how do you strategize for that? Who should be in your wheelhouse giving you advice, both from maybe an advisory board kind of level and from a coach? Because, you know, as Dan was talking about, cash is king. Businesses are often reluctant to spend that money to get that help. I can do it myself mentality, back to the conventional thought. What do they do? How do they strategize that?
Well, first and foremost, I strongly recommend advisory boards once a company has at least 10 employees. As far as how you populate it, generally we suggest a minimum number of 3. Somebody with a finance background, someone that has a marketing background, and someone that has an HR background. Then you're covering, as I mentioned earlier, those areas of management of people, time, and capital. And we've reached a point now where years ago people thought a traditional board, you pay them fees, et cetera, et cetera. Most folks recognize the cross-fertilization of serving on an advisory board is good for them professionally. It's good for their development. So it's becoming very common. In fact, it's become very commonplace to have non-compensated advisory board members.
Makes a lot of sense. You know, Maggie, anything to add to that?
Well, the amazing thing is how willing people are to come in and give advice and help you. You know, you have to be respectful of their time, but I've been amazed at how well that works for people to just ask, you know, would you be on my advisory board? Would you spend, you know, 2 hours a month sitting with me to talk about where I should go with my business?
Let me add to that because I am, I think the play was Oklahoma where it was the little girl that would never say no. I rarely say no to being asked to serve on advisory boards. Serving on those boards has brought me, without soliciting it, over $250,000 of new business. That's a good reason to do it. It's also marketing for you or your business.
Now, is that a personal mantra for you? I know a lot of people have the serve first mentality. Is that a mantra that led you into that, or was it a business decision that you just...
It was neither. The first board I served on, which I still serve on, by the way, 27 years later, was the first advisory board in the Atlanta area for a college, Kennesaw State University. And when the dean there, Tim Mascon, asked me to do it, I thought, A, what's an advisory board? B, what's Kennesaw State? I've never heard of it. And it's something, when I saw a purpose in it, it just simply grew into something that I recognized as something good to do. And also my second year just on that board, I landed about $25,000 in new business.
That has to be pretty amazing to look back and just see the growth that that Kennesaw State has gone through.
That school has gone from a 2-year associate arts program, and most people don't realize this, it's larger than Georgia Tech now. Kennesaw State has 24,000 students. The Coles Business College is actually the third largest business school in the state.
Yeah, and so well respected around the country.
So they've put a lot of time, energy, and development into their business program.
Absolutely.
Over there.
Mm-hmm. And it's fun to watch, and I don't want to take up a lot of our group time, but I'm involved as the only board member that's on the faculty strategic planning committee. And this college doesn't just think like a college. They think like a business. They're worried about where they're going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. They're structuring curriculum to do that. We have stressed to the faculty that, and this is an unusual concept, the students have another title at Kennesaw State. They're customers, and they're expected, meaning the faculty, to treat their students like customers. And I'm sure both of you remember that from your college experience. Didn't happen very often.
No, and that's a very good renegade thought right there. Definitely defies the conventional norm that I think institutions have had for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, let me ask you this before we wrap up today. When you're a business out there and you're getting started, you guys have so much experience wrapped in what you do and what you've done up to this point. What advice would you give? What would you say to somebody who is forging ahead with a new business venture? With this economy, we're seeing more and more people that have left the corporate workforce and they're forced to make a decision. So maybe they're taking on entrepreneurship for the first time. What advice would you give them to make this path have the greatest opportunity for success for them?
I'll give you one bit of personal advice because I learned the hard way. My first business was 1990. I had just left the corporate world, and I knew everything there was to know.
As we all do, yeah, right?
And I ended up in business bankruptcy 3 years later. The next couple of businesses I've done, I've always selected a partner. Every business I've done, it's an alter ego, someone whose personality is different than mine, so that even before you reach the point of having the advisory board, there's someone to challenge the original entrepreneur's feelings. That's not everybody's solution, but I found for me, having a partner, and I do for all five of my businesses, is absolutely the right way to go.
And I think that is terrific advice. And I would add to that to, you know, plan to give it time. I've seen so many, and in my own experience, you know, people get discouraged early on when it's too early. You know, it takes 3 to 5 years. That's just how long it takes, you know. And so you have to hang in there and have planned ahead ways to hang in there financially. And I guess, you know, the other thing I want to say is to, you know, be fierce about your messaging. You do have a powerful vision, and if you don't feel confident about putting that into words, you know, don't pull back and not do it, not communicate. You've got to get your message out. And if you're not a good public speaker, then, you know, there are other ways you can do it. Blogging is, I'm a big, big proponent of blogging. And I think if you want to establish yourself as an authority in your field, it is a great way to do that. And also express that persona I was talking about before, because in a blog, you really do get to communicate a little bit more about who you are as a person, what's the personality of your business, your values, you know, that kind of thing.
I'll add one other thought to that. I love Maggie's thoughts, and I agree with him completely. But the other thing, and I learned it the hard way, don't assume you know. Most of us don't even know what we don't know. So play dumb. Ask questions. Ask questions of friends.
Absolutely.
Ask questions of other businesses. It's amazing how much knowledge is out there, and it's free for the grabbing.
Especially today, wouldn't you say? Yeah. I mean, there are experts out there in everything, and you can take classes. And I agree with Barry totally. It's when you're starting out, you really want to be so good at what you do, and you've got to just open yourself up and be a learner, you know, be a beginner.
Well, guys, great information for our audience out there today. Thank you so much for being here. Let's let them know one more time how they can go about getting in touch with you if they want to find out more about the services that you guys provide in order to move their business forward. Maggie, let me start with you.
I am at maggieanderson.com, MAGGIEANDERSON.com. There's a lot of information there, but feel free to click on the contact tab and call me. I would love to hear from you. Email me. All that information is right there on the website.
Great. Barry, how about you?
Yes, our website is www.flexhr.com. My email address is bflink, that's my last name, F-L-I-N-K, preceded by the initial B as one word, beeflink@flexhr.com.
All right. And just so everybody out there listening knows, Dan, it wasn't that he didn't have anything to put in, but he did have another appointment he had to run out. I normally don't like to broadcast when people have to leave, but I didn't want people to think Dan wasn't contributing to the conversation. He just had to leave. So let me leave you with his contact information. He said the best way to reach him was via email. That is D, as in Dan, Merkel, M-E-R-K-E-L, at southernstatesinsurance.com. Again, guys, thank you very much for being with us today. I want to thank
you,
all
Andy.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Hopefully you learned something that will help propel your business forward. I think the big theme that I heard coming through today is that we know as a business owner you wear a lot of hats. You don't have to do it all yourself, and quite frankly, you shouldn't be doing it all yourself. Find someone to help you. Find somebody to guide you, because momentum is going to create positive results in your business. I'm Andy Lowe. We're brought to you today at Renegade Radio by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.